Welcome back to the Smoking Snake Podcast, episode 73 of the only English language podcast all about Brazilian football. You, of course, have got Enric and you've got myself, Peter. We are your hosts. And Enric, it feels like forever because it's been forever since we done one of these catch-up podcasts or podcasts focused on the Brasileirão. Man, the football is just coming from every angle. It's been awesome to watch, but hard to keep up with. We have four match weeks to cover today. We'll be speeding through those. And of course, the two big games, Copa Sudamericana, Copa Libertadores. We have champions. Congratulations to Liga de Quito for winning the Sudamericana. But a huge congratulations to Fluminense winning their first Libertadores championship. Enric, you were at my apartment to watch it. It was so much fun. And a big shout out to our previous guest, Jean, from Fluminense for Foreigners, and our other previous guest, Luisa Estevao, both Fluminense supporters. Both were in the stadium to see that historic day. It was awesome. But anyways, Enric, we've got a lot to get to. Before we get to it, what's up? How are you, man?
Hey, what's up, Peter? It's been a very good week and so much matches that we had to watch. As you said, match weeks 29 through 32. We've never done this before. We've done two match weeks at most, but we've never let three or four get passed by and not have to talk about it. But unfortunately, this is the schedule that Brasileirão is. And I think it was even crazier last year when the World Cup was in preparation to take place. So this is nothing compared to last year. And yeah, you talked about the finals, definitely big games, and big games for not only fans in South America, but even for us here. We had a chance to watch a game together. It was definitely a memory that we'll never forget. And yeah, it was a great week and a round of matches that we can talk about.
Absolutely. So like you said, the big finals, we're going to sink our teeth into those. But before we do that, let's start in chronological order. Back in Brazil, the Brasileirão, match week 29, a whole slew of games. But let's zero in on two of them. Palmeiras and Sao Paulo, big Sao Paulo derby, 5-0 to Palmeiras. The green machine just keeps on turning. They are relentless. They are ruthless. And the champs are not going to let it slide to Botafogo. Huge statement victory here. Breno Lopes, Piquerez, Marco Rocha, all contributing to just a complete obliteration of the Tricolor Sao Paulo. Enric, I don't know if you have any comments on this one, but just big time win. And that's why we got to highlight that one.
Yeah, it's definitely a derby that it's a must watch for any fan around the world. Palmeiras against Sao Paulo, two of the biggest teams in the state coming up against each other. But this result just goes to show you of how bad Sao Paulo has been away from home in this Brasileirão. Do you know how many wins they have outside of home in this competition, Peter?
No,
zero.
I don't know that. Oof.
Zero. So coming out here, playing in Allianz Park against a tough team, definitely Palmeiras was going to look for and take as many goals as possible and take the 3 points home. They started the game really well, scored early in the 16th minute, and they just kept going, especially with that red card by Rafinha in the second half. You would think that maybe Palmeiras will stop scoring, but no, they had two more to go with Marcos Rojas and Piquerez, so 5-0. Many Sao Paulo fans made fun of Santos the week before for losing 7-1 to Internacional. Now they see themselves losing with a five-goal gap to rivals Palmeiras, so it goes to show how this league is very unpredictable and any team can win. And whenever Palmeiras is in its best form, they can drop performances like these.
Yeah, crazy, crazy. And Sao Paulo, it's I feel bad for them. They've kind of stuck in this rut. Congrats. Of course, they won the Copa do Brasil. They don't have that much to play for. They're not going to win the title. They've already won Copa do Brasil. They're going to coast. till the end of the year and see where that gets them. Let's go to a lot more fun game here. Grêmio and Flamengo facing off. 3-2 the final score. Grêmio 3, 2-2 to Flamengo. And this one's really important, not only because Grêmio get a win without Luisito Suarez, but Botafogo's been stumbling. We knew this in match week 29. We know that even more so now. But this match was not only a match for second place. These matches in the top end are matches for potentially the title. So it's pretty crazy. And it didn't start off that way. Flamengo, much the better team, and an incredible goal. Henrik, I don't know if you saw this. Cebolinha against his old team. Great through ball. Everton picks up the ball, gets past a couple defenders, including spinning around Pedro Caramel, takes out another defender all over the box, patient finish, and just a classy goal. Emphasizes his classiness, no celebration against his old team. Gabigol, take notes, just classy in every way. Amazing goal, and Flamengo take a 1-0 lead. They'd have it until late in the game. Grêmio come roaring back and eventually win this thing. But yeah, that goal was amazing. And Grêmio keeping things up, even without their talisman, Luis Suarez.
Yeah, Everton scoring, you mentioned that. But going back to the first round of matches in Maracanã, he actually scored there in Flamengo's 3-0 win. Also didn't celebrate. So great to see him do that. The goal, by the way, was amazing. The way how he got past so many Grêmio defenders and even the keeper. But other than that, the match didn't go the way we expected it to. I thought there was going to be a lot more goals, especially in the first half and even throughout the second. And it took until the 76th minute when everybody probably thought that the game was over. And even for Flamengo, they tried to protect that 1-0 advantage, playing away from home, of course. But still, I think they had capabilities of pushing for more. And Ferreirinha came out of nowhere. He combined well with his teammate and scored the equalizer. And after that, Grêmio pretty much couldn't stop. They kept attacking and attacking. Nathan Fernandes got the second. And Andre Henrique, I don't know if you remember this goal, but he smacked both posts. The ball went in. It's one of the most craziest FIFA goals that you would see. Absolutely insane. And then it's 3-1 out of nowhere for Grêmio. There was still time for one more goal for Flamengo. Luis Araujo got one with his header, but it was not much time after that for anything for Flamengo to hope for an equalizer. I think Grêmio deserved the 3 points. And it goes to show you how both Grêmio and Flamengo played in the Copa do Brasil. Flamengo eliminated them. So now it was time for Grêmio to take revenge. And the same thing goes for the previous match that we talked about, Sao Paulo losing to Palmeiras. Sao Paulo actually eliminated Palmeiras in the semifinals. So this was short of match week 29, but also Copa do Brasil semifinals of this year. Actually fun to watch, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And Andre, just a quick note, didn't really know too much about him. Saw him wearing the number 77. 21-year-old, really tricky player. I liked what I saw. And yeah, great goal. Hit both posts, like you said. Very nice stuff from him and from Grêmio as a whole. Couple other score lines from the 29th fixture date. Fluminense 5-3 over Goiás. Relevant just because Flu came roaring back. They went 2-0 down and scored 5 unanswered. Atletico Mineiro winning away from Red Bull Bragantino, Atletico Paranaense getting a win, Cruzeiro, Corinthians, that's of note. Inter getting a rare win here, although they're not being that rare after they're bouncing from Libertadores. Santos, big win over Coritiba. Marcus Leonardo in the 73rd gave us the win. And then, of course, you had Fortaleza getting their fixture against Botafogo postponed due to their engagement in the Sudamericana. So, Henrik, let's keep things moving. We're doing well so far on pacing, but match week 30, a couple of nice little matches here to get us going. Let's zero in on Atletico Mineiro, Galo, that is, 2-0 home to Fluminense. Fluminense definitely not in some good form here. They're slipping down the table. And Galo, like we've said, they stumbled a little bit recently at home, but they're trying to make this new arena their fortress. They do so here through who else? Their main man, Paulinho, a double from him. And we know we'll get to it in match week 32, but this guy is becoming one of the most dangerous, technically, I guess he's a winger, but strikers in all of the Brasil Real.
Yeah, Paulinho, the left mid, definitely helpful here for Atletico Mineiro as he has been throughout this competition. 0-0, it ends on first half, but that didn't mean that Atletico will not score, and they did so pretty much with two goals. Same way how they beat Palmeiras a couple weeks ago, Paulinho in the 67th and in the 83rd. So great for him and great for his team, making the jump up the table week by week. And yeah, Atletico Mineiro is in a very good form, as they have shown recently.
All right, yeah, very nice stuff from them. And from a team with a player that's playing at his best in a fortress stadium to two teams that don't really have that talisman player. Maybe you could say Marcos Leonardo for Santos, but huge Sao Paulo derby, at least on paper. Two teams really struggling. I think I called it the ass derby on Twitter, favorited by Fabian from Corinthians of English. So you know he agrees. Corinthians and Santos clash. One all draw. It took a 90th minute penalty to get it that way. Enric, what happened here and what are your thoughts?
Well, another derby is something that as Santos fans, we definitely want to watch. There were some jersey clashes as we talked about, I believe, a couple months ago, but still that didn't prevent this from becoming an important and big match for both sides. Corinthians, I think, was the better team attacking after attacking. Thanks to our goalkeeper, João Paulo, we were able to get something out of this match. He literally saved Santos in more than 10 occasions. Rincon had a goal disallowed for offside. Jean Lucas, he scored an own goal. Very unfortunate. He was trying to clear the ball away and somehow he sent it in. Even Yuri Alberto, who had missed the shot prior, he put his hands in his head thinking that, okay, I missed this beautiful chance, but little did he know that the ball would automatically go in the net. And Corinthians saw the advantage in the 57th. And after that, I thought the game was over. There was no more hope for Santos. But Soteldo, he gets dropped down in the dying minutes. The referee, Daronco, had to go to the VAR and look to it. And in my opinion, I don't care what any fan says, that's a penalty. The contact was very little, but still, if there wasn't contact, something else would have happened. Soteldo would have ran with the ball. Maybe he would have crossed it and scored. So that's definitely a penalty. The man who shoots it, Steven Mendoza, right before he scored that goal, I had some flashbacks in that penalty shootout that we had against Bahia in Copa do Brasil. I thought maybe he's going to miss this, and what a miss it would have been, because getting a point away from home against a rival that's pretty much kicked our ass in the last 2 or 3 years in the Brasileirão and Paulista. This is a very important tie. It seems like a victory, but even a point away from home is definitely huge, especially for a team that's fighting against relegation. But at the moment, so are Corinthians. So both teams, I think, they're not leaving sad with this result, but Santos definitely the happier one from the two.
Completely. And
other than that, we had other matches that went on in match week 30. We had Palmeiras beating Bahia 1-0, a goal scored by Rafael Vega. And again, another huge result because Bahia is one of the rivals for Santos. So we don't want them to take any points. And anyone who wins is doing us a great advantage against them. Grêmio winning 4-3 away from home against América. 7 goals in this game. They had to make some comebacks, but still they got the job done. Goiás and Vasco da Gama tying 1-1. Another important draw that helps us against the relegation battle, because both of these teams are fighting against Santos. So with no one able to get the 3 points, it's going to help us a lot. Atlético Paranaense ties 1-1 with Sao Paulo. two quick goals, one by Pablo in the seventh, and then Pablo Maia for Sao Paulo in the 10th minute seems to be all what came from this match. And Internacional, surprising result here. Ever since they beat Santos, they haven't looked good. You could say that the red card that Vitão got in the 9th minute definitely was the changing factor in this game, but I was surprised to see Internacional even score after that red card. I thought Coritiba would get a 1-0 or 2-0 victory, but it didn't seem like a case. Robson, by the way, two penalty kicks scored. And when you look at the top goal scorers in the Brasileirão, he finds himself with, I believe, 10 goals, and 7 of them have been penalty kicks. So it's funny that how Coritiba are currently surviving. I believe they have scored 35 goals in this competition, and with 10 of them coming from one guy and 7 from penalty kick just explains to you that this team is pretty much relegated. They have no more hopes. So yeah, it's looking bad for Inter, but also for Coritiba, despite getting the win here. And then the last result, shocking result coming from Rio de Janeiro. Botafogo loses 1-0 against Cuiabá. Pita gets the only goal. Some arguments there that it could have been a handball after Lucas Pereira rushed toward the ball, and the ball jumped from Pita's hand, and he was able to score 1-0. So I don't know. Maybe Botafogo fans were hard done by, but yeah, this is what you take when you don't use the opportunities in the first half or even the second to score goals.
Yeah, and I just want to jump back on those last two games there. Internacional, actually, strangely, kind of impressing me. You look at the scoreline, they lose at home. And I've been all over these guys for the last few weeks. They've gotten some consistency after getting booted from Libertadores. And in this situation, three goals after a 9th minute red card, pretty impressive. They really gave Coritiba a run for their money. And I think it may say more about Coritiba giving up 3 to 10 men. And you mentioned Robson's contribution to the 35 goals, him scoring 10 of them. And you think between him and Slimani, I mean, who else has scored for them? So that's kind of interesting. And Botafogo, yeah, this will be I think this is, other than the two finals, Enric, as I was saying before we started recording, this is the biggest story in South America. Botafogo, really shaky here. Like you said, Botafogo fans will say this is a scandalous, scandalous goal. But like you said, you got to put the ball in the back of the net. We'll come back to this after the Palmeiras-Botafogo match because there were some big-time comments. And it's just, again, a shocking loss for them. They look not confident that things aren't going their way. And it's really impacting them and impacting this title race. All right, let's move on to the first big final of the episode. Copa Sudamericana, the Europa League of South America, as it's called. Fortaleza, the Brazilians, facing off against Liga de Quito from Ecuador, of course. And we were kind of talking about the stadium, and that's kind of where I want to start in this game. Stadium of Deportivo Maldonado in Uruguay, in Maldonado, Uruguay. It looked packed, which is nice to see. Only about 22,000 capacity, which I know, I think you were saying that finals should have a grander stage, but, I think it kind of worked. I think two big, massive clubs with massive support that were able to come. But I haven't liked the past few Sudamericanas where they've been in a neutral location and the fans just can't make it to that. And it seems like an empty stadium. This was a huge issue 2 years ago and even last year, IDV and Sao Paulo. So just kind of wanted to mention that right off the bat. And also, two teams, maybe if the average fan may not be as interested in this fixture once they see the teams, but you think about Paulo Guerrero, what a career he's had, won the Club World Cup in 2012 with Corinthians. He starts Mourinho is off, also out there, runner off of the Libertadores in 2020, and won the best player of the tournament, the Rey de America, the King of America. So big match with historic players, really worthy of this final.
Yeah, definitely a big final. Not a fan of where the stadium was located, as you mentioned, and the capacity that it has, but I wasn't even a fan of the timing of the final when it took place, because we've had so many finals, not only in the Sudamericana, but also in Libertadores in the last two or three couple of years. And it hasn't looked good. Not really a fan of the daylight timing. Usually I prefer matches over the night. So for a final to not be playing at that specific time, I think it's devastating for the sport and for the fans watching it. In terms of the game, the first half was pretty much dead, with teams not creating much or many chances. And I feel like they were a little bit scared of going in front first and then having to play the defending match throughout the game. And that's what we saw as soon as that third or second match, second half started. 3 minutes in, and Lucero scores a beautiful goal. The LDU goalkeeper seemed like he had some issues with the sun, and he took a hat, and it seemed like it helped him for a little bit. And a couple of minutes later, it's Alzugaray, beautiful run by him, and he finesses the shot, and the ball goes in. It's 1-1, LDU equalizes, and the ball actually breaks the net. It gives a fake perspective as if it never entered the goal. And it's lucky that we have VAR nowadays, because I've seen some goals like these called off in the past. And I'm not sure if you realize, usually when there's UCL games, the referee actually goes before the game starts and checks the net to see if there's anything wrong. And I'm not saying maybe the referee didn't check here, but if we didn't have VAR, imagine that goal had been called off in a final. It would have been really, really bad. And yeah, thanks to VAR, we can solve these issues.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a great point. And I know I haven't really seen that much in football or soccer, it's happened. It's a thing in ice hockey where the puck breaks the net, and there have been occasions where the goal hasn't been called, or there's even been a famous video where the ref is looking in the net and then he finally sees the hole in the net that the puck got through. Which is pretty interesting. Also, I'm glad you brought up the hat. I think goalkeepers used to do that back in the day. And so you get kind of maybe accustomed to seeing the old time guys with maybe the flat caps. But Dominguez had a flat brim cap, which was quite the aesthetic. It really did the work for him. And when we get to the penalty shootout, which is what we'll touch on now, like you said, the two goals came in. Each team had maybe a couple other chances, it looked like this one was destined for Pens. And wow, the keepers treated us to some amazing saves. Five saves total between the two. Two for Joao Ricardo, including one on Paulo Guerrero, which was very nice, and including this, that was the first one. So he really set the tone. But three saves for Alexander Dominguez, eventually gives Liga de Quito the win in the penalty shootout. So congrats to them. Shout out to Martin Benitez. He's been on the pod before, way back in the day, for last year's Sudamericana final. Liga de Quito is his team. He sent some photos of celebrations with the trophy afterwards. And so congratulations to him. I'm glad that his team won. We were rooting for the Brazilians, obviously. And a great campaign from Fortaleza. They knocked off Libertadores champions and the team of the Pope, San Lorenzo. Paraguayan Giants Libertad, a very stubborn America Mineiro, Corinthians as well, all while staying in the top half of the table in the Brasileirao, which is just crazy for a team like Fortaleza, who of course have the incredible history and fan base, but really not the success, not the football heritage, as Jose Mourinho would say. So incredible. And I just want to say that Vojvoda is one of the my favorite coaches in Brazil. And he's done great things with this Fortaleza team. So Henrik, I don't know if you want to take some time to reflect on the game and Fortaleza as a whole this year.
Yeah, the run has been actually amazing. One of the best that I've seen in the Sudamericana. Maybe them alongside Rebel Bragantino would have deserved to win this. But going back to the penalties that you mentioned, I feel like João Ricardo did everything possible to help his team. I believe there were like two occasions in which Fortaleza could have taken the trophy at home, and they wasted both chances by not scoring either. The goalkeeper saved it, and it's surprising to say, but most of his saves, I believe, were on the right side of the shooter of the penalty kick. So I'm not sure why they always went right. You can always go middle or left or change it up a little bit, but going for the same side seems like a wasted opportunity, and Fortaleza are going to feel very, very annoyed by this result. So yeah, they missed an opportunity to win a trophy, a big title that the Brazilian team hasn't won even last year, where when Sao Paulo lost to Independiente del Valle. But it's going to be a good trophy for LDU. You mentioned Guerreiro, winner with Corinthians in 2012 of Libertadores. Now he wins Sudamericana with the Ecuadorians. So yeah, it's a great tournament and great achievement by this team.
All right. Yeah. Once again, congratulations to Liga de Quito. And of course, again, to our former guest of the pod and friend of the pod, Martin Benitez, who is Warriors of Ecuador on Twitter. All right. Let's get back to Brazil for match week 31. And let's start off with some good news, baby. Flamengo 1, Santos 2. This one took place not in Maracanã, not in Vila Belmiro, but in the capital of Brazil, Brasilia. Mané Garrincha, and of course, Brasilia, the home of our second favorite team, Brasiliense. Shout out Luisa Estevao. Huge crowd, more or less a home game, of course, for Flamengo, the most popular team in the whole country, and especially in that region, a team that Luisa told us, was so popular because they didn't have those long-standing teams in the area. Flamengo, of course, so popular because they were so good during the advent of radio from all over the country. They're well supported, but this one starts off not so hot for Santos. De Hascaeta to Pedro, a little deflection to make it through to Pedro, but his ninth of the season opens the scoring, and then I thought we were done for. Ayrton Lucas pulls up, launches one, and hits the kind of the upright, the corner of the post and the crossbar. So close. I thought we were dead after that, but Santos came roaring back. His first goal of the season, and for Santos, Nonato opens his account for Santos.
Yeah, that goal was very amazing. I did not expect Santos to even score in this game, let alone get a result, whether it was a draw or a win. So Nonato's goal was simply unbelievable. I think it was like long range, and it simply like broke the net. And at that moment, I felt like we had a chance, and that chance became a reality after Harrison got a red card 11 minutes later. Maybe harsh refereeing, I'll have to say that, but we will definitely take that. And with that being said, Santos tying 1-1 heading into the second half against a Flamengo team that has been performing really well this competition since Tite came over. Getting a win here was unbelievable. And Joaquim got that second goal in the 89th. Just crazy scenes. Like, I don't know how this happened. Maybe we had some luck while playing in Brasilia. But actually, a fun fact, maybe many people forgot about this. The last time Flamengo and Santos played each other in the stadium was in 2013. They tied 0-0, and it was Neymar's last match for Santos. Yes. So it's been a long time, 10 years after, and we get a victory here. I think the stadium brought us good luck. And you mentioned Luisa. Thanks to her, we had this game taking place here. She told me that they are actually the ones that arrange these type of matches to be played in order maybe to get some more money from either team or with fans watching the games. So it's definitely something good. And I thought Maracanã was one of the best stadiums in Brazil, but when I saw this stadium, I don't think I've had a chance to see it on live TV before. Mané Garrincha is simply beautiful. It can take many people, I believe 77,000. I think that's the capacity that they have. So yeah, it's definitely a stadium that we want to see more games and more often. So this is a great result, 2-1 for Santos. And again, thanks to Luisa, we got some Brazilian shirts and some Santos shirts. So it was great wearing both of those, especially with this match being played here in Brasilia.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said, you know, it was kind of a soft. And yeah, of course, you know, it was an accident just on the elbow. I think it was Firk that hit, that got hit. It was him or Jean Lucas. Jean Lucas ended up losing half of a veneer in this match regardless. But Gerson, I mean, you can't elbow. VAR says changes the card from yellow to red, and he's off. And Santos before that seemed invigorated by the goal. They came out swinging. And just when you thought that the game was going to end 1-1, boom. Bomb from Joaquim, the center back, launches it with venom into the net out of nowhere. Huge goal, huge scenes. And even before that, I was really noting how impressive it is to see Flamengo, even down a man, how they can still control the game, how they're still attacking, how they're still thrusting. They've got so many amazing players with that are just playing at such a high level that it's a treat to see. And Flamengo, you know, they're not my favorite team, but I have to admit, when they're at their best, they're just unplayable. And they were doing well, even with 10 men, but Joaquim gives us the win. Flamengo, sadly, not keeping pace with some of their rivals to try to win this league. And of course, huge win for Santos to keep us out of the relegation zone. Just big, big win. And even sweeter knowing that it came out of nowhere. All right. Now, this match, Henrik, we might need to spend some time in here. Botafogo versus Palmeiras. Don't need to tell any listeners of the pod how great Palmeiras have been. We call them the machine, the lean green machine. Botafogo stumbling, but still in that first position. Enormous game. People calling it the final of the Brasileirão. 6 points in any, any terms. And just all set up to be just this amazing, amazing match. And wouldn't you know it, Botafogo are off to the races. 3 goals in 36 minutes. 3-0 over Palmeiras. Incredible. And when you go back to think about the first match they played at Parque Allianz, 1-0, Chiquinho goal, controlled game. They suffocated Palmeiras. This game was the opposite. 7 goals would total. Palmeiras came roaring back, 4-3. We had a red card. We had the golden boy of Brazil, Endrique, with a breakout performance again. Incredible goals. And just all the drama that went on afterwards. So, Henrik, I kind of just want to give this to you and just say, do with it what you will. Where do you even want to start with this one?
Well, I'll start with the fact that this is definitely a huge rivalry. If it wasn't maybe the previous years, now it's definitely in this championship or this tournament in the Brasileirão. And I'm glad you brought back that 1-0 victory by Botafogo away from home in the first round of matches. And it's funny that Botafogo actually scored 3 goals in 15 minutes in this game. And they seem to use the same tactic that they have done in the past couple of matches, where they just defend. And whenever they catch their opponent in counterattacks, they use that opportunity. They did so against Fluminense. I believe they got a 2-0 victory like that with 2 goals scored by Junior Santos, maybe at least one. But they definitely did the same thing here. Eduardo and Cheche got the first two, but actually Junior Santos got a third one. And some of the goals that were scored here were absolute bangers. And if Palmeiras wasn't able to reverse the scoreline in that first round of matches after losing just 1-0, they did so with 3 goals being behind. And what a second half that was, Peter.
Yeah, for sure. And you said some of them. I mean, the Cheche goal was fantastic, absolute bomb. And Weverton, I thought he had it covered. You know, he was within his reach, and he even might have got like a molecule of his glove onto the ball. But that thing was just a rocket, and it just beat him with pure pace. And it was incredible to see. And they could have even had more. I think Junior Santos had another chance, and we'll get to what happened a bit later that could have made it four. But like you said, yeah, the second half totally turned around, and early in the second half, the Golden Boy of Brazil, Endrick, goes on a fantastic run, great goal, and Palmeiras are back in this.
Yeah, Endrick, what a player he is. Maybe many people blamed him for not performing enough for Palmeiras, whether it was for Paulista or the last year's Brasileira or this year's throughout the competition. What a game this little boy had, scoring nice and early, giving his team some hope early into the second half. And ever since then, I feel like Botafogo were feeling the pressure a little bit. They knew that with that goal being scored, Palmeiras had much higher hopes, so Botafogo had to also attack. They did so, and they got a penalty in their favor. I believe it was Chiquinho Soares who took that penalty kick, and if Weverton did not have a good first half, especially with that Cheche goal, he definitely redeemed himself with a save here. He helped his team a lot, and he built up to that courage and motivation to keep playing throughout the rest of the second half.
Yeah, I want to ask, because I'll ask about the foul right after this. Do you think that was a penalty? I mean, Rony is a forward. Obviously, he's not going to be the best tackler. He seemed to get a lot of the ball, but also definitely took out Chiquinho, or whoever it was that drew the pen. You're calling that a pen?
Yeah, I think it was a pen, regardless of what happened after. Like, even if Palmeiras, or even if Botafogo would have scored to make it 4-1, I still think, like, being neutral as a fan of the competition, that was definitely a penalty, and you can't deny that. As long as there's any contact with a player's foot or a player's body, regardless of whether you kick the ball or not, I think it's 100% a penalty. But Chiquinho, the man that has been scoring so many goals, maybe hasn't been in a really good form. Definitely thought that by wasting that opportunity, Palmeiras or Botafogo can still take the 3 points home. It wasn't the case. Endrick, what a ball control he had, that 49th minute goal. I think we talked about that. But yeah, definitely one of the big matches for this little guy and the future of the Brazil national team. And we can't wait to see him, how he's going to perform with Real Madrid next year as well. In the 84th, he got a second goal. And once you saw that 3-2, you just knew that at least 3-3 will come at some point. Didn't take long, only 5 minutes for Lopez to equalize. Actually, before that, we had some dilemma with a red card from Adrielson. And many Botafogo fans will try to say that maybe that shouldn't have been a red. I sort of agree with them, because the contact seemed like it was very far from an opportunity to go on and score. It's not that he was the last man, Adrielson, and it was unfortunate for him to go out. And after that, Palmeiras just knew that the game was in their hands and they can do what Palmeiras does best and attack their opponents.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because, you know, the penalty for me on Chiquinho, Rony got a lot of the ball. He got all the ball, and then got the man afterwards. So I'll let the rule book and the ref. But this one, I agree with you. And I can think of a very famous Botafogo fan / owner that agrees with us as well. Yeah, I mean, the foot coming up that high, it wasn't really even up that high. It, like you said, like, it just looked so innocuous. It obviously wasn't. He didn't lose control of his body and the leg. I thought it was definitely not a red card. And yeah, I think they were really hard done. And like you said, the second that happened, Palmeiras were all over Botafogo. Endrick, like you said, in the 84th, nice little fake shot there. And then great finish. Flaco Lopez. Great coaching, by the way. Abel Ferreira, one of the best coaches in Brazil. Even he was coming under the microscope earlier this season. It seems like forever ago now, that given their recent form. But Flaco Lopez comes in on the 87th minute, scores on the 89th. 3-3. And like you said, you knew it was coming. The winner, Murillo, of course, as we always say, scoring center backs in the rest of their aisle. He plays in a three, but he's still a center back. Yeah, 4-3. And really got even crazier after the game. John Textor, the owner of Botafogo, was there in the building on live TV in English, went off on corruption, said they were robbed, says the referee was corrupt, and it accused Edinaldo of theft and corruption live on TV, and called for his resignation the next day. Just a total thing. And he went on social media, posted both the handball against Cuiabá, and then this now, the red card against Palmeiras here. As of right now, he's been suspended for 30 days by the Superior Court of Justice. I don't know exactly what that means. If he's just suspended from, all operations with the club, I don't know how really they have that jurisdiction. I don't know if it's any more serious than that. If there's libel laws involved, I'm not a legal expert at all. So, but that was really crazy, Henrik. And you actually alerted me to this. I missed it on Twitter. I kind of logged off for the night, and I got a text from you, I think in the morning, saying, "Yo, check out John Textor's Instagram and check out this clip." It's going crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the game through the Premier channel on Brazilian TV, and the game ended. I was just playing on my phone, but I still had the stream going on, and I hear a little bit of some Brazilian speaking in English, and it was one of the journalists asking the question, like, "Hey, talk to us about this match," and somehow I just hear somebody speaking, like, full English. I'm like, wait a second, who is this? Did I switch channel or something? And as soon as I saw John Textor, I mean, the words that came out of his mouth are unbelievable. I think it's a little disrespectful, regardless of what the final result is. I think he was a bit frustrated of what happened, and maybe on another day he wouldn't say the things that he said. He even said something crazy, that there were like Palmeiras players running by, and he said, "Listen, guys, I don't have anything against you. I just feel like this game was corrupted." And he even went on and said, "This is my stadium. You can do anything, but this is my stadium, my stuff." And it seemed to be like something that a rich person would say in order to, for example, avoid getting a ticket from a police. So definitely, in my opinion, unprofessional, but he's probably going to regret that despite the result that we saw at the very end. So definitely funny scenes happening, maybe not so good for the precedent, and hopefully Botafogo doesn't get punished for that in this competition or any future competition that they may have the capability of qualifying for next year.
Yeah, you're right. We're making light of it, but it is serious accusations. And though I feel very bad for Botafogo and their fans, and I totally understand how it could feel like they're getting, ripped off, and there's things going on behind the scenes. They don't want, it's the DJ Khaled. They don't want us to win. And these last two games that we've talked about, Cuiabá and Palmeiras, definitely have that exact feel, and I would be feeling the exact same way after that game. But you're the owner, you got to kind of wrap it up. It was an emotional display. I think it showed a lot of people, Botafogo fans. I know one of the other vice presidents was also involved, but can't go after the refs. It was just, like you said, unprofessional, and definitely did, to the neutral observer, definitely kind of came off as, the spoiled rich guy. But we'll see where that goes, and it'll probably fizzle out.
Yeah, and talking about the ref, something that happened yesterday, actually not related to Brazilian football, but it was during the Chelsea-Tottenham match, in which, I don't know if you saw this match, but there were two red cards, and at the end, Tottenham or Spurs coach came out and said, listen, I know it was tough playing with nine men, but at the end of the day, I can't say anything about the referees. I will start to respect the officials, and that's the thing I'll continue to do. So maybe that's something that we can learn from, and not only John Texter, but anyone, because I see so much complaining, especially in Brazil, not only fans, but even managers like Abel Ferreira or even Odair Helman, for example, that left Santos. And yeah, I think that definitely referees have a tough task. Imagine having to deal with 22 men playing football in the pitch, let alone talking to the managers and the sporting directors and the presidents and the fans after. So it's definitely tough to a tough job for them. But other than this game, we had other matches in this match week. Corinthians won 1-0 against Atletico Paranaense thanks to a goal by Yuri Alberto, maybe a mistake by Bento in that match. Internacional, surprising tie, 1-1 at home against, if I can say, an easy team, America Mineiro. They should have definitely won this game and taking care of the result, especially in the first half by scoring two or three goals. And Internacional dropping points against America Mineiro, tying 1-1. They definitely should have taken the job, got the job done, especially in that first half by scoring two or three goals and not let America come back. Grêmio got a 2-1 victory away against Curitiba. Another Robson penalty kick goal. Fortaleza losing away from home to Atletico Mineiro. Two goals by none other than Paulinho, followed up by a penalty kick goal by Hulk. Vasco da Gama getting a 2-0 victory against Cuiabá. Gabriel Peck and Orellano getting the job done against a tough rival. We all know how good Cuiabá is at home. Rebel Bragantino beats 2-0 Goiás. Another important victory that's going to help not only them, but Santos as well against the relegation zone. Sao Paulo also gets a victory against Cruzeiro. Only one goal scored despite playing with one man advantage for more than 30 minutes. So Luciano gets that goal in the 84th. It's definitely going to help Sao Paulo because looking at the table, this situation is not good. And then last but not least, we had Bahia winning 1-0 against Fluminense. First half goal by Everaldo against a team that didn't have any starters. And the reason for that was because Fluminense was preparing for that Copa Libertadores final, which we'll be talking about in a second. So definitely Bahia using that opportunity and getting some points against teams that they're not supposed to. So I wasn't happy with that.
Yeah, big 3 points there in the relegation battle. But Fluminense won't mind one bit because they had much bigger things on their mind. Libertadores final. In the temple of football, that is the Maracanã, we had some really unfortunate issues with fan violence beforehand, ambush attacks, racism, just the normal stuff when teams from Argentina and teams from Brazil clash. But that could not spoil it. And I don't know about you, but sometimes the Champions League final, the lead up and everything, there isn't the anxiety and the anticipation that I expect and love about the build up to a big final. World Cup finals always are that way. Libertadores finals are always that way for me. And it was the same here. It was just, there's an energy. And even all the way up here in Michigan, in the North America, you know, it was just, you could just tell the tension and the excitement and just the energy that was in Rio that day. Marcelo, before the match, this is a guy, he's won everything. La Liga, Champions League, multiple times, Copa del Rey. Just says it's the most important match of his career. Cavani likely felt the same way. Don't think he ever got a chance at the Champions League title. Gonzo's back for the first time since 2011. And then, of course, you had Dario Benedetto on the bench for Boca. Of course, famous for the face in 2018 against River. He was making the kind of tongue face after he scored the first goal in Madrid that year on the Superclásico in the Libertadores final. So just all the elements for an amazing final. It was all there. And back and forth start. Things got underway pretty quickly. And Boca actually came out pushing. And we had kind of our first controversial moment in the early stages here. The defender, Nicholas Valentini, early elbow to him while tussling. I think it was with Gonzo. No card, no foul. But a lot of the cameras were zooming in on that. And I think a lot of Flu fans were thinking, oh no, here we go again. Prejudice, Comnibol against Fluminense. And for the big Argentine signs.
Yeah, the referee had a tough task in his hand, as we mentioned about referees overall. Definitely it's going to be a tough task when it's a final taking place, not only in South America, but against two teams that pretty much with countries that hate each other, Argentina and Brazil, one of the most historic countries, especially for Boca Juniors that has failed to win this competition for more than a decade. And pretty much so for Fluminense, that has never won this competition before. The closest they have been was in 2008 when they lost against LDU, I believe, in penalty kicks. So by playing this game in Maracana, it was going to be a must-win game for them. Definitely a chance that they shouldn't have wasted. And they definitely took their chances in this game. In the 36th minute, we had Herman Cano scoring. What a goal that was. The man that has been helping Fluminense, not only in the Brasileirao of last year or this year, but also in the Copa Libertadores. Who could forget that 5-1 victory in Maracana against River Plate and how important this guy was against the Argentinians. He was definitely very important here for Fluminense because they definitely were going to need him. They needed him to score goals. They needed him in order to push the team forward and push the youngsters and motivate them to achieve what was going to be probably the biggest trophy for many of them, including Marcelo with 5 UCLs and including Cavani that has played with one of the most prestigious clubs in Europe, Palermo, Napoli, PSG, Manchester United, Valencia, and now Boca Juniors.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to the Cano goal, yeah, great give and go on the side. I believe they call it tavela in Brazil. A signature move from Diniz's playbook. Great finish. The movement to peel away from the defender comes away from the net, but then creates the space. Great finish for Cano. It was really satisfying, and the place erupted. It was crazy. Just after that, Enric, I don't know if you remember this. I called it out, a counterattack, and Fluminense were streaking up the field. Cano was open and was more or less tied up and tackled. They might have gotten together a little more accidentally than I initially, but the guy brought Cano down. And Fluminense fans weren't happy about that. And even more after that, Jean Arias was in the box. The Boca player had a fistful of his shirt, pulled him down. And again, no foul, no penalty given. The ref was really letting them play, which I don't have a problem with. Granted, I think the shirt pull was a little much, but it really seemed like he didn't want to kill the game. And I don't want to feed into, shitting on refs now or conspiracy theories, especially after what we just talked about, but it really seemed like the ref wanted an even as game as possible.
Yeah, he definitely wanted that, but I think it's a good idea to let go of some things. But when you see one side doing those things more than another, there's definitely going to be a problem, because you can't always let go of Boca Juniors' mistakes. And then on the other side, it's Fluminense actually playing like little sheeps and not wanting to get in those fights because they could have been penalized. So it was definitely something that maybe VAR could have intervened in and produced some cards and some red cards early on that first half, especially when you mentioned the Gonzo pull in the throat. It was a tough task for the referees and also for the players playing in this game. Fluminense seemed like they were aiming for that 1-0 victory. And when you do that, pretty much teams like Boca Juniors are going to use that opportunity and take advantage for it and attack. And that's what Advin Kula did in the 72nd. He took a long shot and it somehow went in. I know Fabio is a veteran goalkeeper. He's been here in a long time in Brazil, a national team, and also for Fluminense, but he definitely struggled on that one and couldn't get a hand on the ball. It seems like he was going right on the edge of the post and unable to stop that. Boca Juniors ties it 1-1. And the game is forced to go to extra time, in which nobody can predict of what can happen after that.
Yeah, definitely. And I just quick going back to the goal, two things on here. Like what you said about Fabio, he probably could have done better, but Advin Kula had almost the exact same play where they gave him too much space about 20 minutes earlier. He ripped a shot and it went wide. Almost the exact same thing. Marcelo led up on him, gave him the space as he was coming around the corner. This time he took the shot and went in. Kind of a redo there for Advin Kula, and Boca Juniors get their first goal in the knockout stages in open play, which is incredible. And Enric, you skipped ahead to the extra time, but you and I almost had a heart attack the last minute. In the 90th minute, they brought on Diogo Barbosa. He had the most incredible opportunity there, cutting in from the left side, and he skips it wide, far side. You and I could not believe what we saw.
Yeah, and what a huge opportunity that was missed by Diogo Barbosa. We saw the Barbosa in the bag, and we thought maybe he could have pulled the Gabriel Barbosa against River in 2019. But yeah, it was definitely a huge miss. It seemed like he was going for the far post with his left foot from the left side, and it's not the right choice. If you're right-footed at that position, it would have been the perfect opportunity to score and make it 2-1 and end the game right there as it was.
Yeah, and you're totally right, and we'll get back to extra time in a second and pens, or excuse me, and not going to pens. But I wanted to also bring up, I said I was going to say two things about the Advin Kula goal. Second one I meant to say was Fluminense were playing with a man down. Samuel Xavier had gone off for an injury, and even the commentators in the build-up play were saying Xavier is asking to go on, and the ref won't allow him to come back on. Again, I don't know all the specifics of exactly when the ref needs to is allowed to let the player back on, when they're allowed to come back in. I don't know if it's a stoppage in play or a change in possession or whatever it is that they were looking for. But Xavier was off the pitch asking to come on. The ref said no, and Boca scored. Again, one of those things that if I were a Fluminense fan, I would be screaming about. Well, maybe not so much given the events we're about to talk about. But had they... You know, that's the talking point. And you just couldn't help but feel that things were tilted against Fluminense. But let's get to the dramatic climax of this game. Enric, we're in extra time. Extra time. And it's pretty fitting that Diogo Barbosa missed that chance. But he's the one who kind of starts this whole sequence. Kind of an innocuous ball from him. It's headed down in front of John Kennedy by, I believe it was Kino. Just kind of heads the ball down. John Kennedy streaks onto it, smacks the ball, goes in the net. And once again, the Maracana explodes into cheering. Incredible, incredible scenes as Fluminense pull ahead and the players run into the crowd, celebrate with the fans. A lot of these kids probably grew up, definitely maybe a few miles from the stadium, but definitely within the metropolitan area. I think John Kennedy's a local. So just got to be one of the most incredible feelings humans have ever felt.
It's definitely incredible, Peter, especially for a player that holds his name, John Kennedy, and saw clips of John Kennedy's actual nephew telling him, like, good luck, we wish you all the best, hopefully you win this championship. We also saw some clips from WhatsApp of John Kennedy telling his teammates or his friends before the game was played that he was going to be the man of the show, he's going to give Fluminense the title. And we also saw clips of Fernando Diniz telling Kennedy right before that extra time started that you are going to be the man that's going to give us the first Libertadores title. And what a way to do it. What a beautiful goal that was. I think I told you as we were watching this, when that ball is dropped the way it was and you catch it with your right foot or even the left, depending on what's your favorite foot to shoot with. When you hit the ball like that, it's going to go in all every day of the week. And what a beautiful goal. 2-1. He goes nuts, takes a shirt off, celebrates with the fans. But he didn't know what was coming because due to excessive celebrations, he got a second yellow card and he was forced to get out of the pitch and leave his team for 20 minutes with one man disadvantage. So definitely he did his part helping the team, but also did not help the team much for the rest of the match.
Yeah. And I mean, one, I'm thinking if I were him, I would be terrified. I would be so scared that I might have just totally screwed over our team. But also, I don't even think that did he take his shirt off? I don't think he took his shirt off. I think he just went into the crowd. Taking the shirt off, I would almost understand more because that's a black and white. You either took it off or you didn't. So if that's the case, then I'm more okay with that second yellow. But in my memory, and I could be totally wrong, he just went into the crowd and they booked him for excessive celebration, which if you're going to let the guys play, let the guys play. You know what I mean? Don't book someone for excessive celebration. So I thought that was a little unfortunate. But again, tell me if I'm wrong and he actually took his shirt off. But yeah, it's just incredible. Then you'd think Boca now have the momentum. They even had a penalty shot that was a handball that touched the arm. And maybe this is Fluminense getting some luck back, but Lima was bracing his fall and it didn't end up counting. But really the big result from that was in the resulting scrum, the captain Nino, the center back, was kind of pushing and shoving, and Frank Fabra didn't like that one bit and slapped Nino in the face. Which of course earned him a very deserved red card. So at the end of the day, it did end 10-10 in this really exciting final.
Yeah, definitely the red card. We saw one by each side, and I have to go back and correct myself for that shirt taking off. I just saw the replay now. I had some visions of John Kennedy. You know the vest that they usually wear, yeah, where they have like a chip in the back? I had a memory of him like that, but maybe from another match. So, yeah, he definitely didn't get a red card for taking the shirt off. He had his shirt on the whole time. So maybe due to excessive celebrations, it can potentially cause the stadium or the fans to do something out of control. Maybe that's the reason why. So, yeah. I don't know. Anyways, they got the goal, they got the important win, and they got the trophy at home. So regardless of what we say, as long as they did all of those, then they're pretty much good to go. And John Kennedy is not going to have any regret about that goal. Definitely something that he'll never forget. And wherever he goes after this final and play, whether it's in other countries in the world or one of the top teams in Europe, this is going to be forever in his mind and in one of his craziest memories while playing for Fluminense.
Yeah, and just really quick before we wrap this one up, Benedetto also had a chance at the end, and Guga even had a chance that hit the post that would have absolutely confirmed things, but wasn't to be. Fernando Diniz, Fluminense, Herman Cano, Fabio. I mean, the storylines are incredible. They lift the trophy for the first time in their illustrious history. So congratulations to all of them. Again, congratulations to former guests, Luisa Estevao and John from Fluminense for Foreigners. Great stuff. And I'm sure they partied long into the night. And I wouldn't expect much from Fluminense in the next couple of match weeks because I'm sure they're just all hungover. But again, such a historic game. Love to see it. And Enric, awesome to see you IRL here. And take that final in with you. All right, let's just speed through match week 32 in the Brasileirao. Coming back to brass tacks. Gremio, Bahia. This one, implications on either end of the table. Gremio get the big win, 1-0. Great news for Santos. They're back. Gremio are back. Four wins in the last four. That's 12 points. Only Palmeiras in that same period had 12 points. So they also play Botafogo next. So they could really be kingmakers if they play and they play well against Botafogo. America and Atletico drew. Palmeiras, of course, hunting down the championship. Another win here, 12 from 12 over the match days that we've covered in this episode. Internacional adding another win. Still not convinced by them, but they're looking better and moving up the table. Cruzeiro seemed to completely have lost control. The wheels have fallen off. Henrik, I had to double count this, but three wins in their last 17 games, which is just crazy. They've slipped from mid-table to full-on relegation candidate. In fact, I think they're currently sitting in 17th place, that last relegation spot. Red Bull Braga continue their run of form, definitely still in the mix for the title. Flamengo get a win. Goiás get a win. Huge win in the relegation battle. Santos, disappointing draw at home. Really unfortunate. Needed a win. And really unfortunate given their run-in. Goiás, Sao Paulo, Botafogo, Fluminense, Atlético Paranaense, and Fortaleza. How many points are you going to get out of those teams? So should have been a win. Really disappointing despite some good results recently. And I think the most important result here, Vasco hosting Botafogo, Rio Derby. Botafogo need this win. They desperately need it. They couldn't even get a draw. They couldn't even get a goal. Vasco winning 1-0. Just horrific result for Botafogo. Three losses in a row. They've already been stumbling. They have a game in hand over Palmeiras, but they're now level on points after a complete meltdown and being ahead 13, 15 points, something like that at one point. Title race, very much on. Relegation battle, very much on. Henrik, I know I sped through those, but if you want to take a second pass and just maybe comment on a few of these, now's the time.
Yeah, it was a nice run of matches. Obviously, happy with the Bahia loss. I was also happy with Corinthians losing. Maybe surprising that Red Bull didn't get a 2-0 victory as they normally do, but one goal, hey, what a goal, by the way, Helinho. I'm sure you watched that one. Incredible. The move that he had right from the corner kick and banging it in against a veteran keeper like Cassio seemed impossible, but not for Red Bull Bragantino as they keep jumping up the table. Crazy victory by Vasco da Gama, a team that I didn't expect to get anything out of against Botafogo. Maybe a draw was something that they could have gotten at best, but no, it seemed like they're aiming for the win and they got a goal in the 29th minute with Pedro or Paulo Henrique. So Botafogo keeps slipping and the same thing goes for Santos. We tied against Corinthians. We won against Flamengo away from home, both of these matches. And then we draw against 0-0 against Cuiabá. I don't think I have much to say about this. And for people interested to know, go back and listen to episode, I believe, 71, where we had some thoughts of Santos and the whole relegation battle in general. But looking at the table, Botafogo, last three matches, three losses. And prior to that, they had a draw. So definitely the situation isn't good. They're tied now with points with Palmeiras. Despite having one goal or one match to play still, but that match will be played against Fortaleza away from home, so I'm not sure if they'll get any point out of that. And looking at the third position, it's Rebel Bragantino, another team only 1 point away, but this time it's not Palmeiras with 32 matches, they also have 31. So if Botafogo fails to win at least one more game, Red Bull could get that first spot. And what a beautiful run of matches and Brasileirão tournament has been this competition. I would have wished to see this more around match week 18 or 19 because I wasn't a fan of Botafogo being 12, 15 points ahead of everyone else. And I would have rather had them be balanced like this back then and now maybe have a 10-point gap. But no, it's completely different. They seem like they have lost hope. They keep changing managers almost every week with bad results coming on. And by doing that, they're definitely going to hurt the team spirit, because who's going to be that coach that takes them and wins the title? Somebody that they sack and they bring in match week 37 to win it in match week 38. Definitely it's not right. And I think it goes back to the poor decision that Luis Castro made by going to Al Nassr. And he's probably looking back to the Botafogo team now and thinking, I could have been a hero here and won the Brasileirão for the first time in a lot of years. So definitely a team that has been in a bad run of form. Palmeiras, on the other side, ever since they lost to Santos and maybe a game after that, they have been on a 5-win streak. So they have been really good. Red Bull, we mentioned them before. Grêmio, and also Atlético Mineiro, a team that maybe 5 match weeks ago, they found themselves in the 10th, 9th position. Now they're sitting 5th. They also have 6 points less than the favorites to win this competition. And it just goes to show you how quickly things can change in the Brasileirão. Santos currently in the 14th position. It's not bad, but I would have wished for that last match against Cuiabá to be a victory. That would have meant that we would have been tied with points with Cuiabá. And the only thing that would have set them above us at that moment would be the goal difference, because for Santos, it's negative 19. Hopefully, it's not something that's going to cause us any trouble in the end of the championship. But when you look at the teams below us, it's 3 teams that came from Serie B last year: Bahia, Vasco, and Cruzeiro. And then there's 3 teams that are supposed to get relegated: Goiás, Curitiba, and América Mineiro. Hopefully this run of form continues and we can make it out of relegation zone. As you said, it's going to be difficult to find those points, 7 points that we might need, maybe more, maybe less, but 7 is definitely something that we should aim for. But yeah, it's going to be a tough round of games. I'm not sure if you have anything to say about the table overall, but definitely it seems like Botafogo, again, is about to choke this. And it's going to be sad, honestly, because they have been on the top for such a long time. They took this first position, I believe, in match week 2 or 3, and ever since then, they never let that go. And now to be able to do this at the very end is very unfortunate for them and for the fans all over the world.
Yeah, I agree. And you said a lot there, and you said the important stuff. And really the TLDR is we've got a title race where there's 3 points from 1 to 4. And really there's 6 points from 6 to 1 right now. And we've got a relegation battle. We've got 3 points from 14th to 17th or 18th, excuse me. And even more than that, I mean, we've got 5 points from 18th to, from 17th to kind of the mid-table area. So this is everything and more that you could ask for as a neutral. People complain about European leagues. The predictability, same team wins every year, same 2-3 teams, same maybe in England, you've got a big 6, big 7. But really, you know, there's only a few candidates. This thing is wide open. Relegation's wide open. Even qualification for continental competitions, wide open. It is by far the most exciting with the most amount of talent, prospects, and drama, honestly, on field and off, league in the world. It's so exciting. And the fact that we don't have 1 million monthly listeners just goes to show you that people just don't know ball. Anyways, football keeps coming. 2 more match weeks this coming up week and weekend. You know, Henrik, we're tired from covering all this stuff. Imagine these players, man. These guys are burnt out. I can't imagine doing this and then going off to play World Cup, a Copa America, whatever. Brasileirão, week 33. It's kicking off midweek this week, Wednesday and Thursday. Some pretty big games. probably the highlight, Flamengo and Palmeiras, two of the most successful Brazilian teams. And then you also have a big relegation battle, Goiás and Santos. And then, of course, you got a top-tier, top-notch clash, Botafogo. Things aren't getting anything easier. This is a must-win. I think if they don't win this, they lose the title. Botafogo hosting Grêmio. So big-time stuff. And even Cruzeiro and Vasco, another relegation battle. So interesting fixtures across the board. Match week 34, Henrik, I've got some matches that I'm definitely keeping my eye on. What are you looking at in match week 34?
Well, definitely some big ones. Flamengo playing against Fluminense. We get the Fla-Flu. It's not Flu-Fla, it's Fla-Flu this time. Flamengo has its name first. So another match that we saw in the Copa do Brazil, we could have seen the Libertadores. We've seen them play in the Campeonato Carioca. And yeah, Fluminense, the winners. You mentioned them possibly being hungover, but we remember what happened with Sao Paulo when they came back from winning the Copa do Brasil. They definitely smashed their opponent, scored like 3 goals in the first half, despite some of them being offside. So Fluminense, I imagine them being a strong team here. And we got Palmeiras against Internacional, another big match, despite Inter not being in good form recently. Red Bull Bragantino, Botafogo. This is going to be one of my favorite matches to watch. And in my opinion, you said before, Botafogo Grêmio will probably be the decider of if they lose that, they're going to lose the championship. I think they'll win that. They're going to be playing at home. But playing away against a Red Bull Bragantino side that rarely loses, and with the form that they have been in, they could use this opportunity and take that first spot. Oh man, I'm going to be there watching it Sunday, 3 p.m., I believe, or 2 p.m. our time. I don't care what other championship in Europe is going to be played around that. Spain, England, I'm going to be here watching Red Bull Bragantino against Botafogo. It's going to be one of the best matches to watch. And then 2 hours later, we will have Santos against Sao Paulo. I truly believe we can get 3 points out of this game. The fact that it's a direct opponent, and looking at what we did against Palmeiras, we can do the same thing to Sao Paulo, a team that has struggled away from home. So I really hope Sao Paulo doesn't win their first game away from home against us. It's going to suck, man. So hopefully we get the 3 points. If not, then a tie is good enough. And yeah, it's going to be a nice week starting tomorrow and weekend for the Brasileirão France.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, like you said, Fla-Flu that time. This is actually San Sal this time. So, yeah. And I think, again, Botafogo, all eyes are on Botafogo. I'm with you. I'm going to be watching that match. It's so big. And they, of course, you could say they're playing all these big teams. These are tough games, but their fate is in their hands. They're playing all their biggest rivals for the championship. They want to win. They got to win these games. These are all finals for them. I think that's where we'll leave it. We had some Sao call-ups, but we will talk about those in our next episode because there's a lot there and there's a lot to talk about. And we've already taken up so much of your time. But if you have made it this far, thank you so much for listening. I think we've been getting better at this. And we really do appreciate anyone who listens to the end. The listener retainage sometimes is really good, sometimes it's really bad, but either way, dear listener, if you're making it this far, we really appreciate it. So thanks everyone so much for listening, and have a great night.